Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, I'm Candace Jordan, the director of Girl, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Spinney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannah Spinney. And we're coming to you from King Kong Hollywood, Hollywood's number one dance club.
That was so upsetting.
It is upsetting. I know. That doesn't
you
sound...
making grunting dance sounds.
I know. I can't. I have no rhythm. I literally can't even make rhythm sounds.
All right.
I'm so white. King Kong, it's a huge club.
Huge dance club here in Hollywood. And the reason why we're here tonight is because of our guest, Candace Jordan. Candace Jordan is here. And she has a story called I Followed a DJ Around the World.
Around the world. I would never follow a DJ down the street. So following one around the world seems interesting and insane to
me.
Listen,
this is exciting. Candace wrote a film. It's called Girl the Movie. And it's basically about how it's a documentary about following a female DJ named Sandra Collins around the world. It took 12 years in the making.
Wow.
12 years in the making. So what
it's moving
what,
really
first of
slowly.
All,
was she walking around the
what,
world?
First of all, comes to mind is this girl must love electronic dance music.
Somebody's got to.
I mean,
not us. I'm old. I don't know anything about it.
She has got to just love this music. And one of my first questions is that I want to ask her is, has she been a DJ?
Right. Also, second, is it music? This is my elderly. See,
oh,
I'm old.
Honest,
what
like,
can I do?
Considering how big the scene is today, it's great for people to actually get to see an insight to this world, which primarily was dominated by men, by the way. So this starts in 2003, and there weren't a lot of female DJs around at that time.
No.
And now I guess there's a lot more. It's really a coveted position.
It's like I've tried. I've been to places where there are DJs, and I've been to like office parties where they're and you try, and I'm trying, and I'm like, and it's just so I'm so not the target.
They're
missing me and not even knowing I'm there. They're shooting past my head, and they're like, I don't care, old man.
Well, it's really interesting. You think about time, and, for our parents, it was the 50s music, Frank Sinatra. And for me, anyway, it's, Neil Young.
What did your father say about the Beatles in 1983?
He said something about how he took us when we were kids. He took us to see A Hard Day's Night at the drive-in theater. All six kids packed into the Country Squire, and we all had our pajamas on, and then the lights fell, and we're at the drive, and we get the popcorn. The kids are all on top of the station wagon, and then this movie comes on.
Yeah.
And my dad just, he did not expect what came on the screen. Anyway, it wasn't in about 83, I think he said something about how, he was coming around to enjoying
it. It was like, those Beatles are pretty good. Half of them are dead now, Dad. Thanks.
So the point is that I guess, through time, like what my daughter, obviously what she's hearing in the backseat of the car, it must be so antiquated to her.
I know. Whatever, like John Thomas Griffith or somebody, whatever you're listening to will seem like old people music to her.
Sooner or later, yeah.
Yeah, sooner than later.
And a lot of people, obviously electronic dance music is huge, but also other types of music, which is really just sounds. There's music now that I can't even think of the name of it, but there's music now that isn't even like with a beat. It's just like tones. It's like tonal music.
Yeah, yeah. So, which seems ridiculous. On the other hand, all music is just sounds.
That's what I mean. Why not?
You're not thinking of house music. No, house music is like... DJs play house music, is that right? See, we're going to have to find out. I remember.
So we're going to bring
the DJ
Candace.
Was a guy at a wedding. They would say, get in line for the chicken dance.
Oh, right. When you think of DJ, you're not thinking of like turntables.
I'm thinking of Wolfman Jack.
Oh, I see. You're thinking of like a radio DJ.
Yeah, but I'm also thinking like there would be a guy who played records because you were too friggin' cheap to pay for a band at your wedding.
Right, exactly. Well, now it's EDM. Can you tell me what that is, Hannes? EDM?
Electronic pulse that will destroy every... No, that's EMP. I don't know what EDM is.
Electronic dance music.
Oh, well, why did you trick me like that?
All right, you guys. Candace Jordan is on
the way here. Is there any gasoline-powered dance music or perhaps propane? Is there any propane music?
If you go over to CandaceJordanFilms.com, you can see a trailer of Girl, the movie, and it is really interesting.
Yes. So, now, how is that spelled? She has an unusual spelling to her.
Candace? Okay,
yes.
It's K-A-N-D-E-Y-C-E, Candace. Jordan is J-O-R-D-E-N.
Right.
So Candace Jordan Films.com, and you can see, like I said, a trailer for Girl the Movie. It's just fantastic.
And make sure you go to Girl the Movie. If you type in Girls the Movie, it's a completely different genre.
No, this is Girl the Movie.
Girl
Very
the
good.
Movie. Yes.
All right, guys. And before Candace comes on, I did want to remind you that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that'd be fantastic. Here's what you can do. You can buy my book. How about that? That's
self-promotion.
Right. Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life. You know, Hannes, just last week, about 6 orders came in, and I say to myself, I appreciate the people that buy the book. I do.
That's right. You
and
do.
And I always write a little nice thing.
You write a little note.
And I take it to the
post
office.
And you think to yourself, 35 million more copies, I'm self-sustaining.
And I'm not going to be doing coin laundry anymore. And, of course, you guys, you can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at Storyworthy. And, of course, we're over on the Facebook. Join us there. Hannes,
and
thanks
more important,
for being—
just tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends.
Seriously. Just tell people, hey, I listened to this thing. And you want to listen to it, too.
And the next thing you know, there's more and more people listening.
And she told two friends, and
she told, and so on. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around, because Candace Jordan is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer, director, actress, and now author, Ileana Douglas.
And I'll be talking about my new book, I Blame Dennis Hopper.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Matt Oswalt, and you're listening to Storyworthy while Christine Blackburn is giving me a hand job under the table.
And we're back. We're very tired from a night of dancing to the electronic dance music. We've gone to Cantor's. Cantor's Deli on Fairfax. If you're ever in Los Angeles, please come on down. Have a little matzo ball soup.
Do you think that's where the EDM crowd goes?
Yes, because everybody goes to Cantor's. That's the thing about Cantor's. You go to Cantor's about 2 o'clock in the morning, you will see everybody in the world.
Yeah.
There's guys covered in tattoos. There's the hipsters. There's the, what do they call them? The emos. You know who the emos are?
No.
Those are like, that's what they called goth kids now. They're not called goth kids anymore. They're called emos.
And they wear like the black pointed hats.
The black, and they're very emotional.
Like witch hats.
They don't wear witch hats. That's stupid witch
hats.
No,
I swear to God.
No, they wear black eye makeup. They sit around and think about their feelings a lot. And you just want to slap
them. And you disdain them, yeah.
I disdain everyone, let's face
facts. You really do, honestly. Yes. All right, you guys. She's here right now, Candace Jordan. You know, she started off, Hannes, as an actress starring in the movie Star Maps. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a good movie as well. And after doing many films and commercials, she actually turned to directing, which you don't see a lot. You do see women and men who do a lot of commercials and then become apartment managers. But
it's a kind of directing.
They don't really generally
when
see
they,
them
when you apply
there.
For a thing, they're like, what is your motivation for wanting? I don't want to sleep on the street. I'm not believing it. Can you come up with a different backstory?
What is this roof over a head you'd like?
Yes, exactly.
All right, you guys. Candace's movie Girl is a feature documentary about female DJs in the electronic dance music, like we said, and specifically about DJ Sandra Collins. Now, it was 12 years in the making, and we're going to hear all about it. You can find her over at CandaceJordan.com and at CandaceJordanFilms.com, and of course at GirlTheMovie.com, and you can also find her on Twitter at GirlTheMovie. Oh my gosh. There's so many ways to find this girl.
I have to take a nap.
She's here right now. Put your hands together for Candace Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Well, that's true. I moved to LA to pursue an acting career, and it turned to directing. And I want to just reiterate that a little bit because that helped set up how I started shooting this movie, Girl. At the time, I had met this man, David Veloz, who's an amazing writer and director. He wrote Natural Born Killers and Permanent Midnight, and we fell madly in love, and we collaborated on a short film, and then soon after got married and had this gorgeous little baby, Oscar. And Oscar was about 9 months old, and David at the time got hired to write and direct a film about kind of a love story, Cinderella-type love story about two man and a woman DJ. And I have to admit, I was a little bit jealous because one of the producers on the film was Paul Oakenfold, who's a really big DJ. And suddenly now David's hanging out with Paul and going to big DJ shows and meeting lots of girls. And I'm home with a brand new little baby. I thought, well, I'm ready to get back to work. What can I do? So I offered to shoot a companion piece to go with this feature film that he was directing. And I wanted to go out and meet the real girls that were making it in the man's world. And I wanted to... you know, to help make the story real. And I wanted to feel needed, but most importantly, I really didn't want to be left behind. So I picked up the camera and I started shooting. And being in LA, I was really fortunate to meet some of the top girls right away, like DJ Mia, DJ Colette, who sings and produces her own music, DJ Rap, who's one of the biggest DJs in the world, who also produces her own music, DJ Irene, who's just like an amazing DJ. I mean, I was just meeting girls, and everyone was very excited about my film and wanted to be part of it. So it was a very exciting start. I also met like topless DJs, and Roseanne Arquette was DJing at the time, but I decided just to stick primarily with the women in electronic dance music. I met Lady D. And at that time, this is before there really was EDM. This was 2003. So this was just when everyone was like, what is your genre? House, techno, jungle, breaks. I mean, there were all these different genres that are now all thrown in one big genre called EDM, which the hardcore DJs and the people of that scene don't really like that term necessarily. But anyway, there was one DJ that I kept hearing about all the time, and it was Sandra Collins, and everyone said, oh, you'll never get an interview with her, and she's so unreliable. Oh, and she's such a party girl. Oh, she's such a bad girl. You know, all these little things. And of course, only piqued my interest and made me even more interested and committed to trying to catch up with her. And it just so happened that Paul Oakenfold had signed her on his label Perfecto. And so he knew her. And he had coordinated a location scout with David to go to Miami for his film. And at the time, it was during the Winter Music Conference. During the Winter Music Conference, there's also a Dance Star Awards. And Sandra Collins was one of the only female DJs nominated for the best DJ award amongst 9 other very well-known men DJs. So I had to get there. I just knew I would catch up with her there. And so I went. So lo and behold, she won best DJ. I mean, no one could believe it. People's jaws were like dropped, you know, because, you know, it was just... no one can believe it. You know, this woman won, and it was the first night we started shooting. So, you know, in the movie, you see me miking her up and off we go. And there was just something about her. It's just she sort of has this rock star quality where she was like, I don't really know why I'm good. I don't even know why I won. You know, and there was something really attractive about that. And she, you know, she didn't really have anything to tell me except she just felt that she was really misunderstood and that she thought it would be better if I just hung out with her and found out for myself why she was so great. And we did have an instant bond. There was kind of this eerie sense of familiarity and just there was just something the minute we met. It just felt like we were on a mission of some sort. I started shooting her and shot a lot with her in LA, and her album just came out and she was touring. And so she started to invite me to go a lot of places with her. And, you know, simultaneously with this, David's project started to die away. He was slammed with a lot of other work, and you know, it was really fun for me. Just I love being a mother and I love my son, and it was something I've always wanted, but just the juxtaposition to be from housewife, mother, and then out on the stage with a superstar DJ was really kind of fun. You know, it was, for a while I really felt like I had the best of both worlds, being able to shoot all night and then, you know, come home and have this beautiful little baby to take care of, although it was starting to become very exhausting. So, but Sandra, you know, she would invite me to things like, for instance, she invited me to Burning Man. This was 2003. I mean, it was really, that's back when it was really cool, by the way, to go to Burning Man. Because not everyone knew what Burning Man was, but it was really fun. And I got there, and of course, there's no phones or clocks or anything. And I didn't even know how to find her. So I couldn't even find her for the first 2 days. And finally, by the time I did find her, I felt like, wow, this is like the last thing I want to be doing is shooting someone. It really became like my own personal, you know, it was kind of awakening, and I started to, it was the first time I'd ever left my son, and it was the first time I was kind of alone, and it was just the beginning of like a big change for me, sort of grabbing a hold of a piece of my autonomy. And when I got back, my marriage was starting to fall apart, so we decided to separate. So I moved to Venice with my son, sort of like I needed a room of my own. And during that time, when I wasn't with my son, I really did feel alone and kind of on my own. And so I sort of sought out every opportunity I could to film Sandra. And she was, you know, always inviting me to great places. places, San Francisco, Mexico City, you know, and every time I was with her, there was always sort of a carrot being dangled, like, oh, come, you know, she would invite me to come to these shows and she'd say, oh, I've got so much I want to tell you. So there was always this feeling like there's something about this girl that she's going to tell me. And I think that was the hook that kept me going on and on, just always wanting to keep, you know, shooting her. And what happened is I'd come home with all this great party footage, you know, but I didn't really have a story. So about midway through there, I really did kind of lose my thesis, you know, and I became a little bit lost. Occasionally, before I'd go shoot, when I would just test the camera, I would just kind of do my own therapy, you know, on film with myself. So I had sort of some of these testimonials, you know, about what was happening. Anyway, as we continued to sort of hang out and keep going, I guess I just realized that as I went to San Francisco, I went to these shows, she would say, I have these great stories I want to tell you. But once it came time, nothing ever happened. It was like we were just on. It was just gig after gig. And I started to realize maybe there isn't anything else here for me to learn about Sandra Collins. Maybe there is no story. And at this point, I had about 500 hours of footage that I'd already shot. And this has been shooting for almost 3 years. And someone had said, oh, Sandra's, you know, I'd heard a rumor, oh, Sandra's sober. You know, she's always had a reputation as a party girl. It's kind of inherent, I think, to the scene. So I got this great interview with her, you know, and she decided to do the interview. She looks great. She talks about how she's finally off the merry-go-round. And I mean, I had to start to feel like I was kind of finally off the merry-go-round, too. So I went to New York with my son. I was just really feeling like I wanted to just clear my head. I was very excited that I was wrapping this long-term project up. And while I was in New York, I got a call from her, and she invited me to go on a 12 city tour across Eastern Europe, starting in Russia and going to Ibiza and Macedonia and a few other places and ending up in Greece. And it was all expense paid. And, you know, just saying, I really want you to come with me and we could shoot some great footage. And I thought, God, I don't have a single reason to go. And then the more I thought about it, I just couldn't find a single reason not to go. Packed my bags. I was up really late the night before we left. And I couldn't believe it because I'm an incredibly punctual person. And I overslept. I just woke up and I looked and I saw the clock was like 6:01 and our flight was 6:45. And I was just, you know, so I live in Venice. Thank God. I didn't even have time. I literally just pulled like the same sweats on that I was packing in the night before and ran to the airport. And I had all this stuff because I was, you know, going to be shooting for all these days. And basically, I was a walking production company in one. I figured out how to do everything, sound, have the cameras, have everything. So raced to the airport and I just barely got the bags on there. And then as we were starting to leave, I couldn't find her. I couldn't find her anywhere. We were getting ready to go towards the gate. I couldn't find her. And by the time we caught up, we had just missed our flight. We ended up working out the flights. We had to stop in Paris for 4 hours, and we just literally made it to Russia, the first stop. And the minute we got there, the promoters just raced us to the venue, which was far away, and there was a big bridge that was getting ready to close. So we missed it. We got in there by like 4 minutes because the venue was on this big island, and it was this fortress and this old castle out on this island. And it was really exciting. It was full moon. It was like, once we got through it, we're like, we can't believe it. But we didn't realize when we got there that now we had about, you know, 6 or 7 hours to burn before she played. And we had no food. Our bags didn't make it. And we're stuck in this green room that looks like a dungeon. Unfortunately, that night, without any food, with the jet lag, I mean, the people are just literally drinking vodka straight, and we just all started drinking. Well, Sandra comes on. I guess it was about 4 a.m. now, or she comes on, and she's great. She's rocking it. She's always, you know, always delivers, undeniably brilliant and talented. But I don't know. I got a little loopy. I have to admit, I got a little lost. I started running around the place. I'm meeting people and shooting and looking for sexy people and trying to find things and find things to make my film interesting, you know. And I wasn't at my best. Let's put it that way. I kind of messed up a little bit. And so we get back to the hotel. And I was looking, you know, through my stuff and just trying to get, you know, figure out, because we were leaving literally like 11 o'clock. We get back at 6 a.m. They're like, okay, so a car will be here at 11. You're on your way to Morocco. And of course, all I kept thinking about is Morocco. I just can't wait. I've always wanted to go to Morocco. This was the reason I was doing this whole trip. And I start looking through my purse and I realize, oh, I don't have my passport. Wait a minute. Someone, I either lost my wallet or someone stole my wallet. And I'd heard people saying, yes, in Russia, they will pay $10,000 for an American passport and they will kill for an American passport. Suddenly, I have no wallet. I have no money, I have no credit cards, cash, passport. And I'm stuck in this room and I have no suitcase or anything. All I had was my camera. So Sandra went on. I mean, what could she do? And I had to figure out, what the hell am I going to do? I'm in this room. And, you know, and it was a Friday. So they're like, you can't get to the consulate until Monday morning. You can't do this. You can't do that. You know, and so I had to sit in this room, and the only thing I really had was this camera. And, you know, I didn't, the first day I was just like, oh shit, what the fuck am I doing in this room? I really blew it. Okay, I'll catch up. I'll get the money. I'll do this. Now the second day, you know, now I'm like crying, just going, holy shit, what am I doing? You know, I really blew it, you know? And so the third day, you know, I did, it was, there was something happened to me. I had a transformation in that room. I had this, an awakening, really. It was as I was in there, and I'm grateful that I, you know, I never thought anyone would ever see this footage spilled my beans. But while I sat in that room, I really did have an awakening, realizing that, you know, that there was a part of myself that had been missing. And I sort of projected that onto Sandra and was sort of looking for something from her that was really just me. And something about being stuck in that room, I found a big chunk of myself. I found myself. And so came back. Of course, she wasn't speaking to me. Of course, she was upset. And I don't blame her, because, you know, it was an expense paid. She needed someone to travel with. And she was sick of it. She actually had told me other stories of, you know, everyone comes and, you know, you get in the DJ scene, everyone's doing drugs, you start partying. She goes, and she'd seen it happen before, where everyone's, you know, messing up and not really there to help her, which was, would have been the ideal situation. So anyway, I really missed out on that trip, and I got back and I felt horrible, and I just was really riddled with shame about it. It took me a long time to look at the footage, because there's nothing worse than like looking at footage of you when you're wasted or hearing. I was shooting her, but I could hear my voice when I was talking. Oh, is that tequila? Oh, you know, it's just really embarrassing and painful. But it took me, you know, several months just to really get through the footage. And once I had sat down and looked at it, I realized that, you know, with all the footage of all these girls and everything, I really didn't have a story unless it was my story. And so that took me a long time to get my head around that, because I was an actress before and I really wanted to focus on directing, and I had never put myself in the film. And so I had to figure out a way to create myself, you know, as protagonist of this film, which went through, and I found a lot of old footage and I was able to put it together. But I still just shelved it because I hadn't talked to her, and I just focused on being a mother, and I'm also a painter. And so I really just wanted to just wash my hands of it. But it was always felt like this monkey was on my back. So I walked away from it for 7 years, and I had my first, my second solo art exhibit in Venice, and a man approached me and he said, hi, you know, my name's David Taylor, and I'm a very good friend of Sandra Collins, and I really want to get you guys connected. And I thought, wow, how random, you know, how weird. And I said, okay. And so I said, well, you guys are welcome to come take a look. I've had, you know, a rough cut of the film. Come take a look at what I have so far. And, you know, let's see what happens. Of course, I was nervous. I couldn't sleep. You know, I didn't know what she was going to think. I didn't know if she was even going to show up. And they showed up. They came to the screening and she watched the film. And the first thing she said was, well, everything's true. I love it. Let's shoot a better ending. So took us a while to plan how to, I was back on it again, trying to chase her down and track it down. But I ended up going to Mexico to one of her shows. And we shot the ending, and we, you know, so many, it was almost like that feeling. And I can't remember the exact quote, but it's like, everything's changed, nothing's changed. It was like, although so many things have changed over all those years, in some ways, some things hadn't changed. And for her, you know, it's like, she's still doing exactly what she's doing. And this industry has changed, you know, the electronic dance industry, EDM, as it were, you know, as a $7 billion business now, which is just outrageous. For me, I felt like, you know, my life has changed completely, because I'm fulfilling my passion as an artist. And I know that was what I was drawn to with all of these girls, was their passion, their commitment, their autonomy, just their drive towards owning their own artistry. And that was something that I found for myself.
So how do you end the movie? How
so we end the movie end? Is that we're back in Mexico, and she's, you know, we're back in a cab, and I'm shooting her, and we're just rocking it, and it's just back on.
Hoping it would be that she stays on the asteroid, it blows up and misses the Earth. That would be that's the end of Armageddon. I'm sorry, that's Bruce Willis.
Never mind. Okay. So what happened over those 7 years?
Well, you mean when I shelved it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I had edited it. I spent a lot of time, you know, trying to
Because they say that one of the worst things you can do as a documentary filmmaker is to shoot too much.
Yes.
Because 500 hours, how do you get through
you
that?
You can't. It was insane, and that's what happened. It was that because one of the good things about making a documentary or some types is that you don't have to have a lot of structure. And I probably went a little overboard with that because I didn't know what I was looking for, so I just shot everything, and I just thought, oh, I'll figure it out or I'll find it. I had a gnawing kind of feeling in my gut that there was a story that I was trying to find.
So in the actual movie, Girl, the movie, do you show yourself taking those videos of yourself in that room in Russia?
Yes.
What city were you in?
I was in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm. And so was that one of the worst weekends of your life?
I would say in hindsight, it was probably the best, but for sure it was the worst. It was just one, because I threw on these white sweatsuit. So imagine like 4 days in the rain and traveling in the same white sweatsuit. And by the time I got money, my husband at the time wired the money, but just people drove me all around to trying to find the Western Union. I spent a day spending the only cash I had trying to get more money.
This is why I don't leave the valley. This is why.
And he's home with your child.
He's home with the child. The child at the time was, I guess, 3.
So that must have been terrifying for him.
Terrifying. Well, I think we kept it minimized, you know, for him. It was terrifying for me because that's when I realized, like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm a mother. I have a 3-year-old son. I have my whole life, and I put myself in a very dangerous situation, you know, because that Monday morning, someone had called me. They said, we found a wallet. There's nothing in it, but we found a wallet. It's blue. It has a K on it. I was like, yes, that's mine. I drove all the way back out to this venue. It was like 3 hours from the place. And it was very scary. There's guys with machine guns.
Sure.
You know, and I was shooting it at first going, okay, good. Now I have my story. You know, still thinking I'm getting it. Yeah, and then I was like, no, you're going to put your camera away and you're going to get your wallet and you're going to get your act together.
Was anything, no ID, no money?
There was
money?
Nothing in there except the passport.
Oh, thank God.
I know.
Wow,
it was an absolute
miracle. They didn't
take
that passport.
All they did was take the cash and all the credit cards, which was ridiculous. And so that's why it was such a mystery, but it was such a blessing. And by the time, and then when I got back and flew back to Paris and was going into whatever the airline office is, still trying to find the bag, I'm just sitting there talking to the lady, and all of a sudden, as I'm looking at her, I was like, wait a minute, there's a green bag back behind you. So I found my suitcase.
Those kind of details a story interesting.
It was really time to get home. You know, it was like the universe.
Did you finish that? You didn't do any of the other tours with Sandra then? You didn't do those 12 cities?
No, I never got to get to those other things.
And so what was the understanding of when... Like, I'm just not clear from the get-go. Did she pay you to ever shoot her, or you were just doing it on a lark?
I was doing it on a lark.
But she was paying you on this particular trip.
She wasn't paying me, but she paid for the trip. Her agent supplied an extra ticket and a flight.
Okay, I have a question. You said she went on, she killed at 4 in the morning. First of all, who the fuck has time to go to a show that starts at 4 in the morning? But I'm old. But what does that mean? I literally cannot comprehend what she does. She's playing records, any of them. They're playing records, they're mixing music together that isn't necessary, they're doing sounds. How long does this go on? I mean,
let's say
I know that sounds like an hour, a two, but I
maybe
mean,
like 2 hours, maybe
2 hours
probably,
of,
sometimes
of
these...
what? Just her mixing. I'm not
music.
Trying to be as dismissive as I sound. I'm literally trying to,
it's
I don't
dance
understand.
Music, Hannes. You go to a club to dance.
Why do you need a, this is my question. Why do you need a person, a particular person? No,
you
I'm serious.
You don't even understand music.
No, I don't. But you're saying the DJs are particular personalities who have particular skills that make them stars in this genre. So you don't just play a bunch of dance music and people dance, which one could do. So what is it about the DJs? What are they doing that is not just dance music playing? What are they doing that people are like, that person is better than that person?
He doesn't understand.
Okay. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't
no,
get it.
I
know I don't
question.
Get it. What is it?
I mean,
what
I think
is, what
good...
makes her better
than someone
than
else.
An average or bad DJ?
You know, I think first of all, just pure just experience. I mean, one reason why she's so good is she's been doing it so long. But a lot of it is reading. They really know how to read. A good DJ reads the crowd and has a vibe on what they're taking you on a journey. And that's what they're thinking is I'm gonna pull songs and I'm gonna have an idea of a journey I wanna take someone on.
See? That I like. Okay, I get that. Because instead of just like I'm gonna play these 48 songs,
and you might
it's
have
like you're reading it like a comedian reads the crowd. It's like, what am I going to do now that they're going to like? They're not buying into this song.
Right. How to
they're
keep
not
them on
Bridge
the ride.
Bridge Over Troubled yeah. Waters, oddly enough, not working here in the middle of the night in the Ukraine.
Where is Sandra from, by the way?
She's from Arizona.
And how old is she? Well, how old was she in 2003?
Oh, gosh. Exactly how old?
I mean, was she 25, 35, 45?
Okay, hold on. I have to do the math. Okay, so... Let's see.
She's 107, which is the really interesting thing about her.
I would say she was in her early 30s.
In her early 30s. And then why, like you said at that one point, that the promoters unplugged her? Why would they do that?
Oh, I think it was past the curfew, and it's just, you know, it was just unusual because she had just won that Best DJ award. So it was just, you know, and I'd heard these stories where she'd get part of her reputation was that she'd go on the decks and she'd just keep playing. And people were like, you have to stop. And then she just was so into it. And everyone else was too. That she just wouldn't stop. Like, she just loves it. And she just gets in it. She's got that rebellion.
What time do most of the clubs...
Isn't somebody else supposed to... Somebody's coming after her?
Yeah, possibly. Or it could be the last show. I mean,
That's kind of rude then.
Well, it's just like a comic who goes over their time.
Right.
I mean, there's comedians
nothing fucking worse than you're waiting and there's a guy who's like, you're really into it. Yeah, great. I came out here for nothing. No, I'm not important. Don't worry about me.
Right, anyway. Comics do it all the time. They're supposed to do 10 minutes and they do a half hour.
Because they start having so much fun and it's working and they're having a great time.
And the audience is into it. And so there's a question. Does the club owner shut it down? Do they get unplugged or do they let it go? But what time do those shows mostly start?
I mean, I think every single show is different. And now we're really talking about like music festivals. Because that's really what it's all about now, our music festival. So, I mean, they can start at noon in the morning and they can go till, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning.
What is the preferred drug of the audience? Because nobody's fucking staying up for 12 hours if they're not on drugs. God, I sound old, but they're not. There's nobody drinking herbal tea and doing this shit for 12 hours. What are they on?
I mean, there's so many different drugs now. I don't really know. When I was part of it, it really was about ecstasy. That was really the drug of choice, really. And I know people were probably doing cocaine and tons of other drugs too. And
those
today
are the old people, the old school. Yeah, they were like, do some cocaine. These kids today with their ecstasy.
Yeah, ecstasy is like.
What is that music called that's just tones? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like ambient?
Ambient
music?
No, but
whale sounds.
Yes,
which
like
I love the
sounds.
Sound. I love whale sounds.
I love whale sounds.
Getting older by the minute. I have
like
two
tonal.
Things I want to say. First of all, DJ Irene. That name's fucking awesome. Because Irene is an old woman who puts a pastrami sandwich together. So the DJ Irene, I'm like, I'm down with
and
whoever the
DJ,
hell that is.
DJ rap just seems so cliche. That just seems
That
like,
does seem a little on the nose.
Well, she doesn't play rap music. I mean, she's like house and breaks and she does drum and bass. And she's hardcore.
DJ
she's
Rebel.
A tough, she should be DJ Rebel. She's
and how
quite
about
a rebel.
DJ Lady?
Okay, DJ Lady D is what I meant to say.
Oh, yeah, DJ Lady D.
D.
And then there's DJ
Chicago.
Colette.
And
she's
DJ
separate.
Colette.
Yeah.
And she goes by Colette. But she sings. So when she plays, she actually is playing music that she's written most of the time. Sometimes there are other albums.
Amazing.
And then just improvises and jumps and starts singing on top of it.
I would really be DJ. Fantastic. Get a goddamn job.
Get off my
lawn.
Yeah,
hippies. There was apparently terrible film out this year with Zac Efron called We Are Your Friends, which is about the electronic dance music scene. And I remember EDM, and then all these people online were complaining it wasn't a real representation. It was bullshit. And I know what the fuck they were talking about. Now I see. So in that world, is this movie vilified as like a whitewashed bullshit version
Zac
Efron as a crazy DJ?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I haven't seen that movie and I've read everything about it and I have my personal feelings about it, which, you know, just as a. Oh, like I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but just as a female filmmaker and in Hollywood trying to get my film financed and released, I've really struggled very hard, as well as there's still very few female DJs, and it's a male-dominated industry, and there's some parallels there. So when I hear about the Zac Efron movie, which cost, I think, over $6 million, and completely flopped, they're calling it the world's worst opening.
Budget $6 million, box office $6.2 million. So that's a flop.
Because opening week, it's a flop. It's a
like
complete
you
flop.
Don't even make your money
it's
back.
Not about the real thing. And what's happened, and I mentioned before that, you know, the electronic dance music industry is a $7 billion industry now. And so Hollywood's trying to capitalize on it. And that's exactly what the Zac Efron film was about was Hollywood going, oh, let's hurry up. They're running around. Everyone's looking for content, searching.
But like the people who made this movie or greenlit it don't know any more about it than I do.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're completely clueless, just like me.
There's an industry. Make a movie about DJs. They're running around. Everyone's looking for a movie about DJs. And that's one reason why I feel my movie is great.
Right. And your movie is finished. It's edited. It's mixed. It's upgraded to high
and
def.
And people who like it, the scene... we'll watch this movie and go, that's the scene.
And it's broadcast approved. But the problem is you don't have the money for the music licensing.
I'm trying to finish the music licensing.
So did you think that out ahead of time?
God, no. Because you know what? People told me all along, you will never get the money for the music. And if I did, I would have never made the movie.
But
because
you didn't hear them?
I heard them, but you know what?
People, it's a lot of ecstasy.
Yeah, I just kept taking drugs. No, I was just, you know. No, but people kept saying, you'll never get the music. You'll never get the music cleared. You'll never have it, what have you. I've tried to raise the money in different ways. I've had an Indiegogo campaign. I've tried slashing some of the prices. And so moving forward now, I'm getting more economical. There's a company that I'm partnering with in London called Earworm. When Ben Turner is a partner of mine now, and he is the founder of International Music Summit, and he absolutely loves the movie. He's a big supporter.
Yeah, wonderful.
And also now I've reconnected with Paul Oakenfold. And
yeah, I was going to say, Paul Oakenfold gave you some great reviews.
Yeah, and Paul Oakenfold is more than happy to help me with clearing the songs that, you know, are from her album and replacing things and whatever. But all of that costs money, because clearing a music, you have a publisher, you have a label, you have the artist.
It's
there's four
so
sides to it. It's very expensive. But I'm at the point right now, because everyone, you know, the film's so good to go, that I am going to be like cutting probably half the songs in and bringing in fresh artists who are going to give me songs
for
free.
What about Sandra Collins? Now, her music, does she own that music?
No. And that's the thing, is that Sandra's music was just a compilation on an album. She did not produce her music. And that's people always say, oh, I just get Sandra to score the whole thing.
Oh,
and she will give me a track or two, and she's working on that. But, you know, no one wants to give me...
she's playing music that's already been produced and mixing it together.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing is, and people keep saying, oh, get everyone to just give you music for free. Well, the thing is, with the music industry being what it is now, and people don't get paid at all, the only way they actually do make money is in movies. So now that, you know, everything's changing so quickly. So people, no one really will give you.
It must be so frustrating as a musician to be on Spotify and Pandora and every other outlet and just literally make pennies.
Yes. Yes.
Now they know how podcasters feel.
Well, it's frustrating for them, and it's the same. I mean, so what happens is now it's caught up with someone like me, an independent filmmaker, where it's like, I'm just trying to, you know, get this film out there, and a couple of songs I really want. I mean, people come in with numbers that are just outrageous, because you do have the manager and the publisher, and
everyone wants
a big piece of the pie.
Big piece of the pie.
And so it's made it really difficult. But
all right. So do you have another project coming up or something you're working on?
I don't. I'm also, well, I do actually. I have another script that I've written that I'm hoping to direct next year.
Oh, wait, I knew that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's about a woman who's a clone, right?
Yeah.
A female.
It's called Frankengirl.
Frankengirl.
Yeah, and it's a love story. It's about a man who falls madly in love with someone who dies, and he ends up cloning the first woman, but she's not anything what he expects.
Finally, something I understand.
Her name's Dominique, right?
Right. I've written that, and I'm ready to go forward with it. It'll be highly stylized. I think in terms of more of like Edward Scissorhands meets Nolita.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how old is your son now?
My son is 13. Can you believe
him? Has he seen your movie?
He has seen parts of it.
Okay.
Yes,
and
he's
what,
in it, actually.
What do you not want him to see?
Oh, I think I'd prefer not to have him see or hear me in the Russian scenes.
Yeah, because... you know? Because...
I don't know. I just think when you're 13, you probably are looking for reasons not to like your parents. And there's no reason.
Yeah, don't hand him a loaded gun.
Yeah, don't be like, hey, look at your mom. You know, look, you know, although he's, you know, very intelligent and he's very bright and I'm very close to him. So I don't believe in being a hypocrite either. So, but I just, you know, he's 13. I would say it's an R-rated movie. He can wait till he's a little older before he sees R-rated movies.
Fair.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Oh, God. Okay, yes.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Virginity? You just asked me about my son, and now I have to talk to you about virginity.
That's the show business.
I'm not going to say how old I was. Okay, so anyway, I was madly in love with this guy, and It was just the stupidest thing I ever did. And he broke up with me on the way home. He drove me home right after we did it. And in the car, he said, I'm sorry, but I can't see you anymore, because he was a little bit older and he probably would have gone to jail. And so it was pretty devastating. Of course, I journaled about it and then my parents read about it and I just was humiliated. And it was, I had the worst. experience losing my virginity.
It is. No, it's a great topic because most of the stories are like terrible stories.
Well, that's
like,
not a good story, honey.
No.
I'm saying it's a terrible story. It's like they're
all horrible.
Like, at best, the story is like if a man's telling you, he's like, I thought I lost my virginity, but it turned out it was just her thigh and I didn't make it.
28 seconds it took you to tell that tale.
So
holy
you were under 18. You slept with a guy who was over 18.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my God, I feel my voice cracking
the movie right there.
But you were dry. How long did you know this guy before that?
You know, it was so long ago. I really can't tell you. I really don't know.
Do
not long.
Do you feel like you didn't have a talk with your parents? I mean, I'm just trying to think.
No, I didn't have a talk with my parents. I didn't. It's just that wasn't cool then. I think our generation, or at least my generation,
it was
cool not to be an attached parent or involved parent. It was cool to not care, and especially with teenagers.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Because I grew up in the 70s as well. My mom, she would say that, you know, the teachers didn't want you involved in the school. They didn't ask for help. It was no parental involvement. And so I think that got kind of people got into being the latchkey kids and the parents started working and the parents just weren't there.
Now, Christine's 8-year-old daughter, she's going to talk to her about sex so much, she'll probably just become a nun. It's like you will... Your daughter won't be able to approach sexuality while hearing your voice in her head, and she'll be like, "That I can't."
No, I feel like by the time my daughter, you know, she's only 8, but by the time you know that might be coming around for her, whatever age that is, 27, 28.
It's not within the next 10 years.
I want to have a conversation with her to tell her, you know, these are some things that could come up that are going to be inappropriate. Like, you do not want to be in a car, because I had a bad start myself. And
I'd love to hear your story now.
It's very sad.
Oh, it's too sad.
It is. But like, I just don't want my daughter to be in a position that, you know, she's getting driven home and the guy's saying, I'm not going to see you anymore. Like, that just must have been absolutely devastating.
It was devastating.
But I've heard versions of that a million times. Where it's like... The guy has sex with the girl and then breaks up with her immediately.
Right, broke up
I've
with
heard
me
that
immediately.
Like.
So what can you talk to your son about? What is your plan of attack?
I mean, he doesn't want to hear about your dad do it.
All right. First of all, he can talk to dad, but he does feel pretty comfortable talking about certain things with me. But he's only 13. That can change like in a year or a month.
Or a month, right.
You know,
or
so,
a week.
I don't know. I think just being really just bringing just consciousness to anything and just being able to talk about feelings and just bringing, you know, just... I don't know, just responsibility. You know, he sees all the signs of STD. He sees condom. He knows everything. He knows.
In LA,
they teach him
specifically,
everything.
There are so many condom billboards and STD billboards, and then other ones that are like California, number 5 in syphilis. Like we won an award or something.
So we can be number 1. We can do it.
In 7th grade in sex ed, they teach him everything because I said, well, what exactly do you know then? What is he? He goes, I know 3 things. I know you can have sex 3 ways.
Okay.
Right?
What
oral?
Are those?
Anal and
vaginal.
He said that to me, and I just went, wow. So I guess he knows everything. Because my sister told me when I was about 6 or 7 years old, the way you got pregnant was through oral sex.
Yeah.
So I remember just being a little girl, just always like, ugh, I'd look at everybody and think, this is how they had made babies. So I, you know, we didn't even know. So
my sister told me that a boy puts his hot dog in your pants, and I didn't even know they had hot dogs. And then my brother told me that blood's going to come out of my butt. I mean, you don't get the right information.
Right. There's all this talk. So, I mean, they actually already tell children, which I think is weird, but I guess that's the way it goes.
Well,
but
another idea I have is to get books from the library and just let them sit around the house. You know what I mean?
Well,
with the hopes that she'll pick it up.
Yeah, you know what? And that's the thing is I thought the other day my son said to me, he goes, wait a minute, that's the song from 50 Shades of Grey. Don't you have that book, 50 Shades of Grey? And I did. I had it for a while. I tried to read it. I didn't like it. And he goes, it's in the house. He started getting obsessed. He's looking. I know. I saw that book around here. I was like, you really want to read? Now you're suddenly interested in reading. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to get you The Joy of Sex, because I remember that was the book in the 70s that every parent had under their mattress.
Yeah,
you know, you go to your friend's house and you go, and it was a good book. It was good
illustrations. I know, 50 Shades of Grey will turn if you don't want your kid to like pornography, give them 50 Shades of Grey. This is the worst written piece of shit.
I've heard that.
One of the sequels was at work and it's like, I'm trying to read it. It's like the sentence structure is so bad.
Yeah.
That like you can't even read it for the dirty parts.
Really?
You're like, this sentence is just going on forever. ever.
Was it like that, Candace?
It's just bad writing.
I tried to read the first paragraph or the first page. I really gave it a shot. I couldn't stand it. Really, really bad. And I saw the trailer. I watched the trailer and I couldn't watch the movie. And I'm sure someone's going to get, you know, will be mad at me for saying this, but I thought it was just horrific.
Yeah.
Everybody I saw online who was like actually into that was like, this movie is bullshit.
Yeah. And I thought, well, why
can't you? And the story's bullshit because it's like these people, they don't. They were like, you know, we don't just go out and meet random people and decide to get tied up. You know, you can get murdered that way. It's like we go to a club. We had a guy on who goes, what's his name? He told the story about going to that club down by LAX.
Yeah.
It's like you go to a club and you hang around and you meet people and you have coffee and then you decide, okay, you can tie me up. You don't just meet some stranger. It's completely insane.
I don't know.
You
got to be open.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. I really appreciate it.
And so
what else can we tell the people about Girl the Movie? Anything else?
Let's see. I just think that it's
We're ready to go.
And we just, say a prayer for it. And I think it's good for women. And I really am an advocate now of just equality. And I believe that, equal rights for women in arts, music, and film. And I hope, if nothing else, this at least starts a conversation about that. And I just want to get it out into the world.
By the way, when's the last time you saw Sandra Collins?
I saw her actually about 6 months ago, which I had just screened the movie for Paul Oakenfold and was leaving on the phone so excited because he was thrilled about it and said he wanted to get involved. And I'm driving down the street and I saw her walking down the street and she was talking to Paul. He had already called her. And I thought, I looked out of the corner of my eye. I was in Hollywood. I was like, is that Sandra? So she was walking down the street. So it was a really, we keep having these kind of amazing.
It's meant to be.
Yeah, it's meant to be.
I just have to say, I completely forgot to ask, how come she's the only one using her real name? She's not DJ Squarepants or something. It's like she's Sandra Collins. I'm like, I kept expecting you to go Sandra Collins, otherwise known as DJ Leprechaun or something. It's just her name.
She was ahead of her time.
That's right, DJ Leprechaun. By the way, that's a show I would go to.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Andrew Steven over there, Sean Merrick, and of course, Roddy Swear Engine. And I'd like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, which maybe they could change it into some sort of house music. I'm not sure.
Well, he probably, would have some sort of copyright objection, but what the heck. If I had ever heard of him, then he might do that.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Candace Jordan, thank you so much again for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun. Thank you. Super fun.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackson. Saying, make
Yo.
A story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.